Good afternoon, good evening, good metal. My name's Coop and welcome to the Spoken Metal Show. Well, we went ahead and didn't we? We booked some shows. After months and years of talking about it, we finally get around to booking the first ever live podcast of the Spoken Metal Show on the 9th of November at my spiritual home at the Outpost in Liverpool. Why do this show? Well, I'm going to get into that when I do the preview show for that, as I do preview shows for every show I think you should go to, including my own, why we kind of did it. But it was important to, it did get done. A lot of people asking if we're ever going to do a live show, and here it is. And it's a free show. You know, I don't know if it'll stay free. I try my best to do it free. You know, people need paying and what have you. But it's a free show. It's free. The capacity is 40. So, you know, you can register for your tickets now and save in the links and check that out as well. But it was very important to me that I kind of did this show live, and it'll be recorded and what have you, and it'll go online and stuff for the people that listen who can't get to that show, living in other countries and what have you. And then we also booked a second show on the 18th of November, which is a Spoken Metal Show live sessions. And that's where we're going to get a whole group of bands. We're going to record them live. We're going to film it as well. And I'm going to be interviewing them, kind of like a crazy Jules Holland metal type of affair. And with that show, I've still got a band to announce, which is very exciting. But the headliners will be Thrasher Tui, of course. We've had Thrasher Tui on the show before, and they were a lot of fun. And they're just a really good band and hugely entertaining. It's their first show they're ever going to play. Their first show ever they've ever played in Liverpool, which is incredible. They're doing this as their debut show, so I really want to bring them along because it's fun. They're great. It's thrash metal, you know, what's not to love? And then, announced only very recently, was the wonderful Mortalla. And I'll go through these bands when I do the preview show, as I say. What a fantastic act Mortalla will become. Only just starting out on their sort of path, they were fantastic at the Metal on Merseyside, Metal to the Masses event. They were fantastic at that. And I just was really wanted to see more, so I booked them. And then as a third band, I will announce closer to the time. And I'll go through those two shows a bit more. I mean, the first show, the spoken show, if you will, that has our friends from the show, those music guys, Mike Grubert and Far Corwell. We'll probably talk fucking for about 3 or 4 hours together when we get together. But also a UK music solicitor, Christopher Brown, we'll be sitting in and he'll be answering your questions, and we'll be talking about the shit that matters with the band and how to get started with this business side of music, which is incredibly important if you want to make this your kind of your life and your work, and you want to kind of earn money and not be ripped off. So I'll get into all that when I do the preview show for both of those events. But there it is. It's out there in the world now. It's a thing. I've booked the dates. We're doing the promo, so it has to happen. And, you know, it's a nervous thing. It's a new thing. It's a little scary, you know. Will people understand what we're trying to do? You know, is it Coop talking for 3 hours? No, it's not. It's Coop talking to guests for 3 hours. But it's like what to expect. So that the first show is free, the spoken one. And the second show is going to be £3 tickets, £5 on the door. And I'll put all the bits and pieces, you'll have seen this on the social medias out there. So it was nice to start this. I'd like to make it a very regular occurrence. It's nice to do at the Outpost. Real big shout out to everybody at the Outpost Hells and that, and Ian on sound. A really big shout out to those guys. But it was nice to start it, and hopefully I get my game together with it. We can get it so it becomes a regular thing for you to enjoy and you to listen to. So that's going to be the two shows coming up. I'm going to talk about them until those shows come up endlessly, as you'd imagine. And I also just cut a brand new show episode, I should say, with a wonderful, wonderful band called Grave Huffer I've been checking out. And that's going to come quite closely after this one, just to try and get everything kind of rolling again and get used to doing podcasts a little bit more, because I've been knee-deep in promotion. And I'll get into that as well. But now we get to sit down with Mairu. And we saw them at the Metal to the Masses. We've seen them a number of times, supporting a number of bands. I've talked about how great they are. Their new album's superb. We talk about that. I got on to them quite early on in their career, and they've Dawn Creature, and it's just exciting. I just want to see more and more from them. So they've got some shows coming up, so just for example, so they're going on Sunday the 17th at the Quarry in Liverpool. Then you've got one at in Cumbria on the 23rd, to September. I think they're playing with Run and Sabirin and Thra, that's how you pronounce it. And then you've got the at the Underground in Bradford on Sunday the 14th as well. So I'll put all links to all those shows coming up on there. But obviously the Quarry, the one's the one you want to get to. And Myra were just, they're just starting and they're already creating wonderful, fantastic and evocative metal. And so it was nice to really sit down with them and have a conversation. So this is me sitting down with Myra. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a really nice treat for me personally, but it will be for you, the listeners. And you know what, right off the bat, I apologize to this band every time I talk to them because I never seem to pronounce the name of this band correctly. I'm going to go for it now. I'm going to try one time now and see if I got it right. Is it Meru?
I see why you say it. I see how it looks, but it's Myru.
Myru. Do you know what? That would have been my second choice. But ladies and gentlemen, it's Myru. I have Ant and Alan from one of the bands that I think, if the in a scene that's exploding as it is in the Northwest at the moment, there's lots of hidden gems. This may be the shiniest of hidden gems in that scene. Gents, I've seen you three times now. I think I promised every show to get you on the show. And now we've got the new album, which we're going to unpack now. It's a really great pleasure to have you on, guys.
Cheers, thanks.
No, it's really nice for you to ask us to come on.
Every time I've seen you, you've developed as a band, you know, and that's with a short space of time, seeing you each shows. I think the last one was The Outpost I saw you at. And it's just been really enjoyable to see it. You guys develop, and then the album, as I say, we'll get into now. That seems to be a real sort of nice peak to everything's led to. I've kind of seen the breadcrumbs that have led to this album, It's nice to see it executed. And normally, ladies and gentlemen, I would listen to an album, and then when we go through an interview stage, I would be able to unpack it and talk about all the different minutiae of what I liked about the album. This album, I'm still unpacking. It's massive. I mean, we'll get into that because it is I feel very special. But before we get into all of that, let's talk about kind of how we get here.
Okay.
So for you guys, where does music of any kind enter into your life?
Oh God, do you want to start?
Yeah, every day for me, pretty much. I don't know. It depends, like. But I'm always on, you know, I get up in the morning and, you know, before work, I'm on YouTube listening to like the new, you know, whatever's recommended in my playlist at the time. So say if I listen to like a band like, you know, Cult of Luna, and then somebody else, you know, that'll recommend me to like, is it Psychonauts?
Yeah, Psychonauts.
A band like that, and then like Brutus, you know, things like that. This is genre specific to this
sort of
band. And that's kind of helped me throughout the past few years, you know, with the writing process as well. You know, from when the band started to it is now. So, like, when it comes to, like, me, you know, learning how this kind of genre kind of works and how it's influenced me, I kind of really delve into, like, the bands that I really, like, are drawn to vibe-wise. And I have learned a lot over the last few years how to, like, approach writing process for me. So every day I'm pretty much listening to what's out there, old and new, really. So that's really
what was the starting point for you? What was the kind of the very first bands that you
got? The Metallica was for me when I was a kid. You know, first ever band that was like 92 maybe. Yeah. When he played Freddie Mercury's
Benefit concert. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Then I played Sabbath and the Sandman. That was my kind of first introduction to metal. And my dad listened to like Genesis and things like, you know, more the prog stuff and Pink Floyd. That's where I got, you know, when I was younger, that's what kind of influenced me. And then I got really into punk when I was 18 years, because I was a skateboarder for years as well through school and stuff. So I was into like NoFX, Green Day, Blink-182, you know, things like that. I've kind of developed from there, you know what I mean? So that's my earliest.
It's always, I think people maybe don't realize when they have Live Aid and benefit concerts and things like that. Is sometimes that's a little sneaky route for sort of the edges of various musics to get in. Like Metallica, I think didn't they open that Freddie Mercury concert? I think
I don't remember how it, what the lineup was, but I just remember seeing them and how different it was. I think Guns N' Roses played it as well, but I didn't.
Kind of over at the time, but Metallica.
Yeah, but I don't really remember them from. I remember them when I watch it back now. Obviously, I've seen it all, but I just remember Metallica standing out so much because they were so different.
Yeah, and it was
Dad, who are these? Who are these guys? Are they? He didn't know himself. You know what I mean? Because they're like fresh, especially in the UK.
They're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, my dad seen Thin Lizzy live back in the '70s and things like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And all that. So
it was because
it's always been there. My household.
We're still at that stage around that time when the internet's not really there, and there's not really, you know, there's no real sort of gatekeepers to music. There's no one telling you or helping you listen to maybe a couple of radio DJs. So yeah, that is sometimes probably the first time someone have seen a heavy metal act, if you will, a metal band before. And it probably launched quite a few bands, you know, when they saw they were like, what, you can play E and it's okay. And it's you know, you can dress in your street clothes and because they were still, you know, black t-shirt and jeans and all that, you know.
That's my fashion now, so that's how I look. Yeah.
It's amazing as well. Like, they love the appearance because obviously you get to millions of people in that crowd.
Cool.
But the sound is fucking awful.
Yeah.
I've got friends who were there and they were like, it was awful. You know.
Yeah, obviously we had saw it on telly or on VHS, wherever it was. I don't remember what the sound was like. But I just remember him being like, I was like wowed by like the power of it.
What did you do? Did your dad go, okay, well, if you like that, you're going to love...
No, not really. No, that's
Live and Dangerous, for example.
No, kind of went for me, and then I got into, like, more of, like, yeah, like I said, punk stuff.
You know,
Yeah, so kind of, like, that was the only kind of only heavy band I ever heard when I was, like, seven or eight. And then by the age of 10 or 11, I was into skateboarding then. So that was all the punk stuff from then on, you know, NoFX and Green Day, all those kind of things. And then later on, I got back in... When I started playing guitar when I was 15. Mm. And then... I got back into new metal came into play there. You know what I mean? So it was like Limp Bizkit and all that kind of stuff. And Slipknot was a big one. So I got into when I started playing guitar, I started learning those kind of riffs and then learn Metallica riffs and things like that.
It's interesting that you, when you say you go back as well and you kind of reassess artists as well. It's interesting. You know, we're seeing that a little bit to a certain degree with new metal, with like Limp Bizkit's a good example where. When they first came out, it was like, this is amazing. A lot of people were like, wow, there's a DJ and it's rapping and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it went through that period where it was hated almost. Then it was completely ostracized and Fred Durst was seen as a joke. And now when they play festivals, they're selling out festivals. And people
because it's nostalgia. People love nostalgia, as always say. It reminds them when they're in school and stuff and kids. Because I seen them. I saw them in 2010, I think, at Leeds Fest. And then Cypress Hill in the afternoon, and it was fun, you know, just fun to watch them, you know what I mean?
That's interesting. Yeah, do you say fun? And I think that's missing sometimes, isn't it? I think that's what gets leveled at the metal guys sometimes is that it can't be fun. You know, and I would argue that metal is probably the most fun because we don't take ourselves at all seriously on certain things.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, when we do, you know, crazy acts that mix like, you know, Black Sabbath with Burger King and McDonald's stuff. Surely we proved that we are able to, you know, to have fun in a show, you know, enjoy it. It's not always incredibly serious. It's interesting.
It's like a pantomime. For me, a lot of the time, a big metal show is like pantomimes. I mean, I've seen Rammstein live, and that's just serious fun, you know what I mean? It's just it's hilarious at some point, you know what I mean? But it's a big full-on production, you know what I mean? And they love it. But the music can be really powerful and heavy. But on top of that, they could have this kind of cool pantomime fun show. You know what I mean? Depends how you approach it, really.
Yeah, I think when you metal has a wonderful thing to be able to do that, like where do something that's ridiculously overblown and vaudeville or whatever. Yeah. But then from that, elements can be taken and made kind of more interesting. Say, like a band like Ghost takes something like 70s rock. And kind of maneuver it and almost ABBA and that type of thing and maneuver it into a whole different thing.
Yeah. I think it just depends on, you know, the artists themselves and what their influences are. They're trying to like blend certain things that they've loved and trying to like make it into their own thing. You know what I mean? Like that's what we've done in this band. You know, we took little pockets of certain, you know, mixing genres like post rock and post metal kind of and metal itself and try and blend them. Yeah. together to make our own kind of unique to us. Anyway, I'm not saying it's unique. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's what we'd like to.
No, no one's unique.
It's been done before. You know?
When we say unique, no one at home can see us in inverted comments. What we are doing.
There's always that thing that everything is, you know, a version of something has gone before it. I think it's most exciting. And ladies and gentlemen, you'll hear that on the album Soul Cultus, is where you do go to a part of the map that people haven't gone before. You know, like you talk about, you know, post-metal and things like that. We will obviously get into the sort of the details of the album, but you can hear where you've gone, okay, well, we like Metallica and this is that framework, and we like this and we like progressive elements, but now we're going to do this. You know, you can hear yourself. If, ladies and gentlemen, if this album is anything, it's the sound of someone moving off the map in certain parts of this and taking some chances. You know, Tom's saxophone stuff is really interesting colours and shades that I haven't heard that often in progressive and out, dare I say, experimental metal. And so, you know, it's nice that you say that, because that does fill in, as the listener will hear as well, fill in certain gaps about your playing and what we ahead and we go, oh, okay, that's where that came from. And that's nice. That's exciting to hear that. So what about yourself there then? You know, where's the starting point for you?
I think for me, Korn, unashamed to say that, you know, new metal kid, you know, through and through. I'm in a month's time I'll be 38. So if you were, you know, around that time period when I was, you know, mid to late teens, the new metal was, you know, that was the business, that was everywhere. And that, you know, anime, I was obsessed with anime and manga films, and like I got Street Fighter 2, the animated movie, for Christmas one year, and I remember Blind was on the soundtrack, and I was like, what?
It's Blind on the soundtrack.
It's on the credits. And I was like, what? And I remember hearing
it's a great game.
And I was so, you know, I was about 9 or something, and I remember hearing the credits, and you hear that, oh, are you ready? And I was like, I imagined this, like, trucker, this huge fucking muscle-bound dude. And I was like, who the hell is this? This is a heavy singer. And then when I eventually saw the video on MTV 2 years later, and you just see these, like, skinny guys in trackies. I was like, whoa.
No, Dave just turns up with, like, suspenders on and stuff. And
exactly. But no,
he's his tracksuit.
Exactly. Yeah. But, yeah, I was obsessed. I loved Korn. I mean, it's...
They're another band getting, you know, even now you have to preface it by saying, you know, almost ashamed to admit I liked them, but they're getting, you know, they're a classic band now. You know, they have carved out their niche.
Absolutely. And they definitely get their kudos now, and I think it's rightly so. Like I will hold my hands up and admit I was one of them who, you know, I went through a massive extreme metal phase, which I'm fully still into, and I'm never going to get out of. I love black metal, death metal, every other kind of metal in between. But I went through that, you know, that phase where you're like, new metal, I don't listen to that anymore. And I feel bad. I'm kind of like, I feel bad that I was like, you shouldn't have turned your back on those, because I regularly stick on Issues by Korn, and that is.
I thought some of the last stuff was good.
Oh,
the
absolutely.
Last two albums. The Nothing and that
laugh. They were fantastic. I loved the latest stuff.
The enthusiasm, the stuff.
I think they were fantastic. I think they were head and shoulders above a lot of bands in that same.
But they know what they are. They know what they're doing.
And I think, you know, totally, you know, even now, still maybe slightly even underappreciated, you know, the stuff that they were doing. Massively. You know, if I said to you, ladies and gentlemen, now there's a band that's got, you know, that's mixing samples and, you know, and drum and bass, if you will, you know, as well, mixing all this type of things together, that the lead singer plays bagpipes, that they're pretty much one of the predominant forces behind 7-string heavy guitar. You'd be like, wow, that sounds incredibly progressive and interesting.
Yeah.
You know, we don't talk about that maybe enough. Like, you know, they wrote some of the, what will go down as being some of the classic metal songs of all time. That opening little chime on the guitar, that fiddle in it. That's
it. You know what it is.
And it's like, it's nice that now, I think that's one of the things that streaming services and stuff has given us now, is that people can listen to that almost out of context now. They cannot be caught up in what it was when it came out, what it represented, and go, hold on, is this song any good? Do I like this song? Yeah. And that's why you're seeing a lot of those new metal tracks appearing on newer sort of movies and stuff, because they've had time to kind of distill and become, okay, it's just a good song, the end.
Exactly.
You know?
I think Jonathan Davis, I think the whole band, they're just brilliant songwriters. I still regularly will stick them on, and I'm just like, this is just a well-made, like, it's like my partner, she's not a fan of new metal. She doesn't get where still. I love new metal. She's very much a metalhead, but more like classic, you know, Priest, Sabbath. Yeah. But like, when I'll stick on Korn, she'll be like, it's like a pop song. And I'm like, it is. But I think that is a really positive thing. Like, and I think it's nice to hear bands like kind of rapping them and saying it's cool to say you like, I mean, not cool in that kind of like that novelty act way, kind of like that Limp Bizkit gets. Yeah. I think just Korn genuinely are just a solid band. Like, like regardless of genre, they're just great songwriters and it's just great at what they do. Like, I've heard bands like Devourment on podcasts, they've name dropped Korn and said like, oh yeah, great songwriters. There's a band called Chat Pile, like a quite a modern, like sludgy noise band, great band. And they've repped them in recent interviews, and it got me thinking. I was like, you know what? I fucking love Korn. I miss listening to Korn. And I just went down this wormhole of just sticking them on it. And you know what? I will proudly say they were a big influence on my who they really are.
Because as well, like, it's not so much, when you say someone, I listen to this, the music that comes thereafter that you produce doesn't necessarily have to sound like that.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, you're taking that energy. You're going, okay, I really like that power, the vibe, and the thing, the movement.
The groove.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to recreate that. You know, I can hear Metallica in your band. I can hear that. But it's not Metallica riffs.
No, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And so it's like, it's interesting that, you know, I think sometimes people can kind of feel the weight of their influences rather than the power of their influences, if that makes sense.
That's a good way of putting it.
I think it's and it's a shame sometimes. It's nice to think that we're getting that period of reassessment though for all the bands. Slipknot were a classic example. I remember the metal community hating the fact that they brought Sid on and had a DJ. It was like, what the fuck? It's absolute heresy, you know.
I love that first album.
It's absolute. Still now, it sounds as though it's recorded by a group of guys next door.
Yeah, it sounds like a madman.
It's full on. I'm just loving it. I love it.
When you listened to Korn, and that's kind of your first sort of your band. Did that start to give you the impetus to play, or were you already playing at this stage?
Oh no, I definitely wasn't playing. So it was Korn was kind of what put me on that track, and like I was just obsessed. It was kind of like, because being that kind of angsty weirdo kid who liked, you know, geeky stuff and sci-fi and comics and stuff, it's kind of, and manga and whatnot. When you discover, you know, because the angst speaks to you when you're that kid, and then when you discover Korn. It does. It's kind of like it's kind of like the equivalent I can think of is like this generation for things like Harry Potter or something. It's like I respect that. It's not my bag, but it's like I respect like people find that's like their community, that's their peoples. And I remember when Korn was first like getting really big, I was like, that's my peoples, that's my thing. So I remember just watching the videos on MTV2, and I was like, you know, saying to my dad, I want a guitar, can I have a guitar? And for some strange reason, he put me off the idea and he convinced me I wanted a bass. So then I ended up with a bass. And for many, many years, I played bass. And then the reason I played guitar in this band was pretty much because my best mate already played bass and we decided to... And I thought, all right, I'll sell my basses when I got a guitar. So that's... So that's how I... But it's no secret that... I play a 7-string guitar tuned to A.
Yeah.
So it's I'm not trying to bury the lead.
Well, you basically introduced us to that tuning.
Yeah, well,
that's why we play an A basically.
To jump ahead a bit.
Yeah.
I stopped playing guitar and I stopped playing bass and stopped being in bands for a long, long time. I joined the army and shaved my head, all my dreadlocks fell out, and then 4 years later, the rest of the band were all in another band together called Kusanagi, which is a post rock band. And I came with them to Camden to a gig at the Black Heart.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't drank for about 3 or 4 years, but at the time, I still did. So I remember being quite pissed at that gig. And I was obsessed with this Stefan Carpenter signature guitar on eBay, and I just kept looking at it, and again, I wanted it. And then eventually I went up to them and they were sound checking, and I was like, I bought it. And then all the way home, all I could think of was like,
I want a jam, I want a band,
because I remember watching them, and that was like, because I remember thinking when I came out of the army, I was like, oh, I don't want to do bands anymore. I can't be bothered. And when I on that gig, I was like, no, I've got the bug. And all the way home, I was starting to put my plans together. And I was like, maybe I should ask these guys to jump. And then that's literally what ended up happening. Yeah. So, you know, through circumstance, that band went through a bit of downtime.
Yeah.
And then I decided to capitalize with my 7-string to justify the purchase.
Yeah, but
are you telling me this entire band was formed to justify an eBay purchase?
That's yes, exactly. a drunken eBay purchase, which I no longer own because I physically couldn't play that guitar. It was too big and heavy for me. It hurt my back. The neck was horrible. It was like a cricket bat.
How many Doom and Sludge bands have been formed to cover purchases of pedals and amps and stuff.
Yeah,
but I have to do
something. Oh, there's so many bits on the album where it's literally in there because I bought a new pedal and I wanted to use it. That's a fact.
Some of the best songs of all time have been wrote around instruments and pedals and amps because of that. Like, you know, some of the best songs of all time.
I need to use this on this.
Oh, yeah.
Or I'm wasting money.
Yeah. And anyone who says otherwise is a liar to
us.
But I love that. I love that's the energy that you take to the band. It's like, it feels like there was something inside that just simply needed to get out. I needed to jam with these guys. I needed to kind of do this and you know, it seems like, you know, without putting words into your mouth, it seems like that it started at one point. So when do we officially call this a band then? When does that exactly happen?
2018.
Yeah.
So long story short, we all, if anyone who doesn't know where it is, look up Skelmersdale. It is.
Yeah, it's near Wigan.
Yeah, near Wigan, Liverpool-ish. There's not a lot there. Anyway, there isn't really a music scene. There are some bands.
Yeah.
Not a lot of heavy bands. And there's a venue, which is brilliant, but it's underused. And like people kind of don't know it's there, or they forget it's there. And it's the people there who run it. They're doing wonderful things. Like it's charity funded.
Yeah, yeah.
And they put on, you know, like indie nights and stuff, and that's cool. But
we were jamming. Basically, it's like a venue / practice rooms, practice space.
We started jamming.
So we had a jam in there, one jam, or two jams, might be the second jam. And then this band that was rehearsing next door,
knock on the door,
open up it. Right, guys, we think this sounds great. Want a gig?
I know it's better than that because we were literally mid writing something.
Oh,
and then they opened the door and we were like, what the hell's going on? There's people watching us. And they were like, we stopped and we were like, you're right, can we help you? And they were like, keep going. Why are you stopping? Yeah. We thought you wanted the room. We were like, overtime. Like, no, brilliant.
Yeah.
And long story short, like, we came mates to these lads and they were
basically, the officer gave, we only had one song. Well, we had half a song.
Yeah, half a song at a time. Yeah.
And the gig was like 3 months or something like that. And they were like, you want a gig? Like, well, when is the gig? So like 3 months, like, well, we need to write a set then.
Yeah.
And so actually write more songs then for this. And that's how it started.
Right? Yeah.
Like,
what was that first song? Is that something you still play?
That's off the first album.
Yeah.
First EP, sorry.
Which is in order. We wrote each song in the order.
It's called A Fire Within the Splendor. And that's the first song off the
EP.
Yeah.
That'll be opening track. And that's the first song we wrote.
Yeah. The song order on that EP is literally as we wrote them. It was like, they got finished up until that gig. And it was literally like the last song. Yeah. They're like,
I never recorded it.
Yeah. But the lovely bunch of lads called Dome, and they're like kind of like an earth, drone, like carnate earth, that kind of bag. Yeah. And like, you obviously don't get a lot of that kind of stuff in Skem. When we were going through the car park taking our stuff in, and we could hear like just heavy doomy riffs, like Sleep kind of stuff, and we're like, there's a heavy band here tonight. Like, this is weird.
The same as us.
It's like, do you know like that Step Brothers moment? They came in and we're like, we're best friends. It was that kind of a thing. And like, I wish they'd gig more because like we haven't played with them in a while. But
we put them on a few times.
Yes, and they put us on. Yeah, lovely.
That's kind of the impetus of how like we got the enthusiasm and kind of they kind of not forced us, but they kind of like give us the drive to like finish a set of songs to like, you know, to as a full
gave us a deadline. It was like, all right, you got a gig, and we're like,
okay.
Like, so we gigged there. The
I think without that, it would have took a lot longer to
right
to the gig, you know, to get the enthusiasm to like play live. But that was, I think that, sometimes that's good though, to kick you up the arse and get the ball.
Sometimes, yeah. Well, but I would put it to you guys that, you know, that maybe it was meant to be, because it probably came fairly natural. Was it a play to kind of go, okay, we want to sound like this? Was there points of reference when you started, or was it just Ant goes, I really like this particular sound, let's go with this and see what happens? Or
a bit of both. So what was happening was, so the other three guys, Ben, our drummer, he plays guitar in the other band, and then Dan and Alan both play the instruments they normally do, guitar and bass, in their instrumental post-rock band, Kusanagi, incredible band. They've been 10 years, is it?
12 years.
12 years. Right.
So basically, that kind of, basically, I wanted to do something personally that wasn't like that. You know what I mean? Because that's a lot more mathy, and more progressive and more technical. And this is more like, I personally want to do something kind of opposite to that on the guitar. So this is kind of giving me the, kind of the, you know, the option to do that personally for me. And then we just, you know, like we jam from there kind of thing.
I mean, the original master plan for me when I was hungover driving back in the van was, I want to join Kusanagi as a third guitarist, and I was going to try and approach them about that idea. That was my original plan, but because basically I didn't, my thing was, after, you know, I've been in bands before, like, and I just thought, if I'm ever going to do it again, I only want to do it with like my mates, my close mates. I don't want to go on forums and talk to randoms and try and make a band that way. I can't be asked. I'm too long in the tooth for it. Dan, the bass player, he moved out of Skem for a little bit. He moved to Congleton, so it was kind of an excuse to like get, you know, to hang out and
because sometimes without the band existing, it was, you know, even now, like, you don't see much of each other because of family and work and that kind of stuff. So it's a good social thing as well, I think, being in a band generally.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It gives you gives you something to do, you know, like anything else. So for me, that's just as important as the music sometimes. To see people, to get out of the house and do something, productive.
Well, what you're seeing, ladies and gentlemen, those of you who haven't seen them live, is that there's very small amount of vocals, but there's also, you know, it's like, you know when, the best example I can give is it, you know, in Pulp Fiction, when Uma Thurman and John Travolta are having that moment, and they say nothing, and they were like, what was that? And he's like, well, that's how you know you're with someone's really special, because you say nothing and you just enjoy what's going on.
The dancing.
I would put it to you guys that that's what happens. Certainly when I've seen you play live, there's no nods or clicks or something. There's no signals. It's very, you know, there's just an understanding. You know, ladies and gentlemen, when you see this band live, it's a beautiful process that you see helping them. And that can only come from, like you say, being socially very connected. You know, you get on, you know, you have that. That sometimes you know where it's going already. There's a lot of unsaid stuff, you know, going on. That comes across in the new album as well, because, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of like long tracks on this album that require concentration to properly and understanding to properly kind of execute. You know, I mean, Torchbearer is like, what, 9 minutes long?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Rite of Embers is that like 10 minutes long? You can't produce those types of work without having a very deep understanding of what the other person wants as well. You know, I would put it forward that you just can't do that. You can't follow a chart, so to speak, to do that. That has to happen organically, or it just doesn't come from
jamming, really. You know what I mean? And you kind of, as sections get written, you go, right, we want to kind of try to do this. This needs to do something else now. You know what I mean? It's progressive music. You know what I mean? You got to, you know, it's a journey. I see the album's a journey. Like, this is from start to finish. You know, it kind of tells a story without telling the story to me. You know what I mean? That's kind of how, you know, try to put it together. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like peaks and troughs, and like, you know, like, yeah.
What's
like...
the when you kind of, you know, you'd played, you know, a number of shows now, you'd had the EP. When you sat down, or you did, was there a moment where you sat down and go, okay, this next album now, you know, this is what we want to do. This is what we want to achieve.
Well, I don't know.
Yes,
I
mean, and no.
Yes and no. We didn't have a finished idea per se, but I wrote
I wrote a new riff, which ended up being the opening, the riff to Torchbearer. The first chord progression you hear is something I showed Ben, the drummer.
Right.
This was straight after, like, we finished, you know.
This is the first riff after the EP.
After the EP, then I showed the guys, and then started on Torchbearer. But Torchbearer took a lot longer than we thought it would do. So we put brakes on Torchbearer about halfway through the process of writing that, and went straight into Wild Darkened Eyes, the song that became Wild Darkened Eyes. And for some reason, that one just came a lot quicker. Yeah. The same, and I wrote that, a part of that riff, in this very room here. And it kind of was kind of a corn.
It was more of a corn kind of.
It's in the middle of the song, and it's a slightly different rhythm, but
I
was like, keep that.
What is that?
I was like, that's my corn vibe.
Yeah, you were like, nah, you can't. I was like, nah, keep it.
So I kind of changed the riff and then based the whole song around that particular riff. Yeah. You know what I mean? But that one,
Feels like very much one of the peaks of the album. Like it seems like where everything's working too.
Yeah, it's the most kind of the poppy one, if you want to say, in that world.
A good starting point, I think, for someone introducing someone to the band. Even though I'd argue that the Torchbearer probably is for me the one I've been showing people and going, right, look, yeah. This is why I think this is important. When you're sitting there then and you kind of write the stuff, did you have it all complete before you go into the production of it and actually, you know, kind of performing it? Did you have everything set? Was some stuff worked out in the studio? And I'll explain why I asked that question in a sec, but do you have it all worked out, or was there still things to do?
Well, I'd say 90% of it is all worked out. So what happens is we write, the album was like written in the room, as it were, like all of us present, or, you know, at least three quarters of us present, you know, in case one person couldn't make it that day. But like for the most part, it's this is what took us a very long time. But we would do it. We'd complete songs and we'd redraft them, and we'd do the next move on to the next song. Yeah, and some of them were like
two or three different versions.
Exactly. I mean, like there's still versions. Like I've got, you know, rough versions on my phone, and I've listened back to recently, and I've been like, fucking hell, that's like that song changed a lot. And that's not to say the earlier versions were weaker. They're just different. Mm-hmm. And these every song we allow them to go on this journey. We just
like,
kind of,
for instance, Perihelion, the song Perihelion on the album. The ending was pretty much the start of the track. One of the ideas, the big riff at the end of the song was like, that's kind of how it went into that a lot earlier. And then we kind of completely rewrote that song.
It was unrecognizable. But...
Yeah, and then the end, and now, you know, we kind of like, we kept certain bits we really liked. And then reworked.
But the original version was still cool. It wasn't.
It was fine.
We could have recorded that version.
We would have done it with COVID, probably.
Yeah, this is
what I mean. That was.
I mean, yeah, it's no secret we had a lot of time on our hands, and this is why we were writing a lot in the room, and it became like.
What do you call it? Chinese democracy of the post.
Yeah, Chinese democracy of post metal. Yeah. So we.
That's what it felt like. Especially with progressive music, it's. You're painting with really, really big colours and big sort of things. See, you know, you're dealing with like songs that, like you say, you know, they're not the 3 minute pop song, they're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes long songs here. You know, you've really got to be considered. Everything has to be considered. If you sit down to watch a film that's 3 hours long, it needs to grab you and keep you for that period of time. That's a real. It's an art form. It's hard to do that, to balance that as well. You know, to allow it to. One of the things that, ladies and gentlemen, I think you'll find with the album is that it isn't afraid to like leave a lot. There's an enormous amount of space on this album and open sort of room to let everything breathes on this album, ladies and gentlemen. As you'll hear, like the scattered dust and stuff is there's room here to move, and that's like that's the one thing that I would say to people going in to listen to this is that there's a very quiet confidence with this, chaps, that, you know, that I was really impressed with. And so the reason I ask if you had everything worked out is that when does Tom come into the picture? So Tom Drink, for those that don't know, he's a wonderful set of ears, the stuff he did with Venom Prison and whatever, you know, it's super. When does he come into the picture?
So Tom recorded the EP And then after we worked with Tom, we knew we don't want to work with anyone else. Why would you? He gets our sounds, and you know, you knew him before. I do, yeah. Well, Tom was like a friend of a friend of an acquaintance, and he was a nice guy, but I hadn't seen him in years. And then like it was when we were talking about recording the EP and looking for producers, engineers, or what have you. We were doing a bit of research, and then I started. Ben in Prison, Dawn Raid, all these like amazingly produced records. I kept seeing Vagrant Studios, Vagrant Studios. I was like, what's that? And I was like, oh, fucking hell, that's Dringy. I know Dringy. And then I hit him up, and then I said to the guys, I was like, trust me. Because like, I didn't even realize at the time he'd done work with bands that are more in our like our wheelhouse, you know, like, for example.
Absolutely, like
June, for example. If I'd put June onto them and said like, This guy's like, you know, mixed this or he's mastered this. It probably would have been an easier sell. But at the time, I was like, check out this Dawn Raid, this black metal album. This sounds amazing. But they were like, okay, Ant, we trust you, but that doesn't sound anything else like us. And I was like, trust me, he gets it. And I remember like exchanging emails back and forth. And I said, like, all right, I've got this band now, and it's doing like neurosis-y like type stuff or whatever. And he was like, yeah, I'm in. I love The Eye of Every Storm, and I was like, cool, he gets it. And I was like, guys, he gets it, he wants to work with us. Once he did the EP, it was
no brain after that, really.
Absolutely,
you know what
absolutely.
I mean, because even my other band, Chris, now you've recorded with them now. So now, and obviously, his new studio is amazing, The Arch in Southport. So I couldn't recommend it highly enough. And we did with this album, we did most of it, I did all drums and everything at Vagrant, and then about the last quarter of it, we did it, all the vocals and everything at this new studio last year.
So it was kind of like happenstance where, quite poetic, we got to be one of the last ever bands to record at Vagrant, which is pretty much just like a locker unit or like an industrial unit, next door to a garage and then a yoga studio or something.
Yeah,
but then we got to be one of the first bands into the arch, which is the state of the art. Like, if anyone listening is interested in production or recording or is in a band,
I'm not paid by them anyway.
Yeah,
like, we're salesman for
it. It's a wonderful facility, and it's like, how much did you use any of the studios I know the answer to this almost because of the record points to that, but did you use the studio as well? If you know what I mean? Did you kind of use that to mess with sounds and kind of take an extra color to things, an extra sort of dimension?
Well, when you mentioned like the saxophone, Tom basically playing the album, I didn't know he played sax. And I was like, right, well, that'll be a nice touch, especially in the interludes between the songs. I was like,
it's a wonderful moment where the record steps out from it almost itself, and it's the genre a little bit to kind of just go, it's just, like I say, another colour, another shade, where I was just like, that's Tom's ears, that bringing that to the table.
And also for me, when you're talking about space, Pink Floyd, they use that and their stuff, and the way they give songs the breath, and space in their songs, and I've missed a load.
Well, that's the real secret to all great songs, I think. I think certainly if you want to boil it down to a very base level, the best riffs of all time contain the most amount of space in between them. You think of something like Back in Black is very, that's a couple of chords.
But what says it's hard to write the space within the notes, between the notes, you know what I mean? That's an art as well. You know
As Stravinsky once said, it is the noises between the notes that matters. And, I understand that, but that comes from confidence. Like I keep saying, gents, that, you do that because you know what you're dealing with. You understand what you want to say. So you don't rush what you're saying. You carefully place these pieces together. When did you... Was it hard to walk away from this album in so much as did you go, okay, it is finished, we can say it, or was it hard to kind of do that because there's so much going on?
Absolutely.
It's so big, there's so many facets to it. Do you get to that moment where you're like, when do we say it's done here?
Yeah, I think it did get to the point where we had to just say, like, we all have to just kind of say, it's finished, guys. It's finished. Because, you know, unless we waited till there's going to be another pandemic. And, you know,
there's not like pressure from label or anything to finish it.
Yes.
Down from the label was great. From Trepanation, you said, just, you know, give it to
me. It's ready when it's ready.
It's ready when it's ready. Give it to me when it's done. And we signed them in 2019.
Yeah. What happened was, so to jump around the map a bit, yeah, we covered the Sacred Dissonance EP. Was pretty much just our live set. We wrote it in order and then recorded it that way with Tom. And then Alan starts playing around with a few new riffs. Started with his Torchbearer, but we thought, we knew that was going to be a longer piece. We thought, we'll come back to that one. And we started chatting about this idea of like, what if we like, because we already knew our next batch of songs was going to be slightly different and a step up from the EP and more of, you know, kind of like us finding our sound. So we thought, how about we just record a one-off single? Let's just do that. There's not
enough. And that was the first version of All Dark and I.
Exactly. So we that came together really quickly, and it was that when Dan Dolby
he literally
messaged us when we were in the studio in Vagrant recording the original, the 2019 version of Wild Dark and Eyes, and he was like, you know, I'm putting this label together. I'm looking for, you know, kind of like a stable of bands that's got like a very dark kind of overarching theme. Yeah. And anyone is interested, check out his roster of stuff, Trepanation. He puts out some fantastic things.
Fantastic work he's doing there. Yeah, yeah.
He is. He really is. Because it's, I mean, there's other like indie smaller, like, you know, like, and it's kind of like, or do we do it on our own? Like, we put the EP out ourselves. But then when Dan approached us, and I was, you know, we were literally in the studio doing Wild Dark and Eyes, and I was looking through what he wanted to do, and I was just chatting to the guys and I was saying like, he gets it. Like, look at what he's trying to curate, and it's more about that.
He's putting out what he loves. Yeah, he clearly is putting out the stuff he enjoys. Yeah,
and it kind of gives you the enthusiasm and the kind of the confidence as well. You know, like, especially when you know someone who's really into your work, or they approach you, they're going, "Okay, cool. Okay, we'll go."
Yeah, it's because it's we're talking about songs and music here that requires, you know, it requires to sit down and pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, this isn't, you can't put this on in the background, you know, you can't, wasn't designed for that.
No.
And that requires a little bit of an investment, you can't just idly listen to this album, ladies and gentlemen. I've listened to this album all the way through in one sitting numerous times now, because it just belies that. It just has to be that way. It seems to fit. I don't know if the intention was to make a concept, but it feels maybe not in so much as in the narrative, but certainly in the feel. It feels collected. It feels like a collected body of work.
It's like a journey. You know, it does flow a certain way in that order. You know what I mean?
So in order to do that, you have everybody that's involved, from the musicians onwards, needs to understand that it's like, it's something that's going to require some time and patience. Yeah. Almost, you know, you're not going to get, like, there's no hits coming from this, ladies and gentlemen. There's no airplay radio type of stuff. It wasn't designed like that. It wasn't how it was designed fundamentally. And so, were some of these songs played live before we got to the studio?
Yeah, not all of them.
Obviously, Wild Dark and Eyes.
Yeah, Perihelion maybe a couple of times. I think what happened was, because of, you know, the obvious, gigs were few and far between. We would have loved to have, you know, gigged it a lot more before the studio, but just the way things worked out, you know, there's, you know, the gigging world just wasn't what it was anymore. And, you know, the amount of gigs we were playing, it was like a quarter of the amount, you know, 1 year, we were, you know, 2020 for argument's sake, or 2021, whatever it was, you know, maybe we played 4 gigs, 5 gigs, or what, you know.
We've only played 2 this year.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, so
like, you know, it says a lot about, like, you know, where the scene's at the moment. No, it's no one's fault, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So basically, you just got to crack on with what you can be involved with
and promote and
see what comes from, you know.
This record came out in July, essentially.
Yeah.
What's been the feedback? Do you think there's been people out there who've got it, got the intention of what you wanted? Can you listen back to the record now objectively? Now, can you actually step back a second and go, okay, did we get it?
For me personally, I have a process where I don't for a while listen to it back. You know what I mean? Because obviously you live with it for so long.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what's behind the curtain. You know in the ins and outs of everything. So it's nice to hear. It's nice to hear feedback. You know, through reviews and people, what they've said when they bought it and things like that. It's amazing, and they have got it. But for me, I'll probably won't listen to it properly until about 6 months' time. I listen to it again. Obviously, like, you know, if I need to learn, you know, if we go back, remember, we're rehearsing it live, I might just a little bit to get, you know, remember what parts were. But
But other than that, no, I like to give it a bit of a breather for me personally, and relive it again down the line.
Yeah,
I like that's how I know when I finish albums. That's how I've done it in the past, and that's what works for me.
It's a good way of kind of assessing. It's normally I find artists listen to this stuff either, like you say, pre-tour or pre the recording of the next album sometimes, because they go, okay, this is what we got. What do we want to do now? It just becomes a point of reference in the same way you listen to an album by someone else. So you go, okay, let's see where we want to go. I think if the record is like kind of 80, 90% of what you're doing, there's got to be a percentage now that's the live show.
Yeah.
When did you start thinking about a live show then, and how you want to actually execute this live?
I think we're still thinking about it. I think that's the thing. One of our big goals is to play it in its entirety, start to finish.
The very obvious question is, can we do it in its entirety?
It all depends what we get offered and how much time we get, because a lot of sets and stuff are like 30 minutes long or 40 minutes, whatever. If we get offered like a slot where it's three bands and they basically the promoter wants us to do that, we'll give you an hour or 50 minutes, whatever we need.
The album's what? It's like 48 minutes.
Yeah, it's like 50 minutes. I mean, a little bit of talking, maybe what the odd little word, you know, like saying hello and stuff. We probably need 55 minutes live.
I think it's potentially, it could be broken up into two sets.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I think you could probably do either end the first set with Eyes and then or begin the next one. I think it could be put forward as a two suite sort of thing.
I think that's totally doable. I think the next gig we've got coming up this month,
we're playing
pretty much the five out of the six songs.
Yeah, looking forward to.
Yeah, so we're rehearsing this week for that. So that'll be good.
Because that was the other thing, ladies and gentlemen, that I found really, really exciting about this band was that when I saw them live, it was not like a show I'd seen before. And the things that are normally negatives were all played as positives. So I'll give you an example. So very little crowd interaction. Normally, taboo. Don't do that. You must mention your Facebook pages and blah, blah, blah. Put your hands in the air. Normally, taboo. It was a massive bonus because it felt as though anything said like that would shatter the illusion of what was being placed in front of you.
It's nice to hear you say that because you clearly got what we were going for.
Yeah. I'm not into promoting Facebook personally on Facebook pages and Instagram pages in halfway through the songs and stuff. It does take away from the vibe of the.
That's
of
very much trying. By design. Yeah.
There's no right way or wrong way of doing it.
No, of course not.
But a lot of bands do that.
Yeah.
A lot of bands check out this. It just takes away from what, and sometimes it kind of ruins it for me as a viewer. You know, I'm watching a band and like going for this certain thing, and then halfway through, like, check out our Facebook page, guys. High five. It's like, you just took me out with what you were trying to do there. You know what I mean?
On a YouTube video you're watching of a beautiful piece of music, and then halfway through you're advertising Monopoly app.
We're dealing with art, depends on the job and the band.
Sometimes it's appropriate to do that. Sometimes it's very much appropriate. But
your average rock and roll band, if it doesn't get the crowd going and do all that type of thing, that's not good. That's they are the meat and veg of what is meant to happen for it. But for you guys, the music almost denotes what's going to happen there. And then visually, I found it very interesting. Once again, ladies and gentlemen. You're meant to light a band. The band's meant to be lit up. You're meant to be able to see the people. That's what spotlights are for. This wasn't the case for these shows that I've seen. No lights. I thought it was blinding the crowd.
Well, I don't know if you've seen Russian Circles live, but they don't. You can't see them. Pretty much smoke and starlight. Even a band like 100-Year-Old Man, we're friends with. We know them. They do the similar thing where it's just they're dark on stage, and it just creates that. It just takes you out of.
The instruction to the lampy for dragged into sunlight was kind of to blind the audience almost.
Yeah.
You know, and it's often because the music leads that way.
Yeah.
And that's one of it leads it that way. It's not that you don't want to be seen or that's really it's about an ambience, you know. Yeah, and I think is there gonna be the next time I see you guys, whenever that may be, is there gonna be a move to start improving is the wrong word.
We've got ideas to put for the stage, and yeah, we've got ideas to like.
It's just having the opportunity and the time,
and making things, and yeah, we've got some cool stuff, and you know, yeah, good ideas planned. It's just the time and also get you know the shows as well. Like waiting for the shows to come up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. To warrant the effort, the investment of equipment or whatever we need to put that forward.
We've talked about ideas, so we definitely want to evolve the live set and do more of that because, you know, I completely appreciate what you said. Then it is controversial to some people if they've never seen a mostly instrumental band, but, you know, they might be a bit like, you know, these pretentious wankers, how come they're not? How come they're... I've got friends who've said, like, oh, I've been to see... I've heard friends say even like the team Rage Against the Machine at like Leeds and Reading, and they'd be like, "Oh, it was a bit shit." And I was like, "Oh, come your shit." And it was like, "Oh, you know, they didn't talk in between the songs." And for me, I'm like, I don't get that because I'm quite happy to just like just hear the you know song.
That's what Buff and Mastodon says. They play samples between the songs because he doesn't like. You
know, and that's more my bag.
Chit chat throughout you know throughout the songs.
But for some people, that's a big no. For some people, they need to hear the frontman. That's part of their life experience.
It depends if you've got a frontman as well. I would argue
that you know. You are frontman less. There really isn't. That's not what this band is about, ladies and gentlemen. One of the good things about this band, and what I watched when I saw it at the Outpost, is something that you only get in very rarefied moments, and this happens on a big forum and a small forum, where the crowd is silent, and normally you would think that's a fucking nightmare because we're pre-programmed to be. As much loud as noise as possible, as much activity and energy as possible out there, and all the rest of it is the way you know you're doing well. It's a crowd jumping up and down, etc., etc. But really, the real goal, as I think Steve Vai once said, he said that you know it's one skill to get an entire arena chanting your song, but it's an entirely different skill to bring it down to one note and have that person totally enamored in what you're doing. I watched at least several of the people at that show. I was one of them. For the moment I was watching that show, that was everything. There was nothing else. And I think that's what you were going for, that it was like, look, you would share this 30 minutes with us and we'll just let this wash over you, rather than being, you know, there's a song, clap your hands, here's another song, cheer. Yeah. It would that kind of almost runs away from what you're trying to do, you know?
Absolutely. I'd much rather divide the audience and have half go to the bar and half stay than indifference. I think that we're not the kind of band where you can just kind of go, yeah, they're all right. Do you know what I mean? You either like what the
because you never know how people are going to react. You're just going to do your thing, and you hope you get that kind of reaction. You know, it's nice to hear that.
Well, you're at the stage now, which is both an interesting and difficult stage because you know the shows that you're going to play. There's very few bands doing exactly what you're doing, certainly on that type of sort of framework.
Mm.
And so you're always going to be playing with other bands that are not of that ilk, and that's okay.
I like that.
Yeah, and that's okay. The trouble is that the audience have to then sort of pivot, and they do. You know, I've seen it happen. They have to pivot to your thing, and that can be quite a juxtaposition. You know, if you let's take the bands we talked about. If Rage Against the Machine was supporting Pink Floyd, they're both amazing bands.
Yeah,
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's still a juxtaposition. Now, one of the things that's interesting, we talk about these things as being negatives sometimes, or people can talk about these things as being negatives. Progressive music often gets this levels against it.
Yeah.
But in reality, the people that get that particular thing, you know, get it big time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they really get it. This isn't wide-reaching music. This isn't for everybody. And by its nature, it isn't for everybody. And that's a massive positive. Metal is one of those few genres where the band that went on before you could have a pit, then you go on and you're just as accepted, and it's considered just another part of what metal is, the massive world that it is.
I think that really showed at the Metal to the Masses.
Agreed.
Molly Chambers, because it's something we're really embracing, this the mixed bills, because, you know, as you said, there aren't a lot of bands, especially in the Northwest.
And also, you've got to kind of like take what you're given to an extent. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Yeah. You've got to turn up and play, do your thing, and you've got to work with what you've got in that moment.
Really. Absolutely. If you're only going to play with other post-metal bands, like, we'd be, you know, we wouldn't, we'd very rarely gig. Like, we embrace playing mixed bills, and especially that night, it was nice to see how...
it was varied, wasn't it?
It was very varied.
All like, four bands.
Very varied, yeah.
And it was nice to see how, like... Because it can go either way on the mixed bill. You can think, "Oh, we're going to go down like a lead balloon," and it was nice to see how appreciated we were.
But I think the people were up for it though, as in like in different ways.
I think there was a continued audience that wholeheartedly got what you were trying to do,
absolutely,
and achieving what you did. I think there was a whole bunch of people that were like, "I get this, I get this." Definitely. And well, like when I first seen you, and then my hook and line into you was Dawn Creature, and I was like, okay, I need to sit with this. You know what I mean? And are we in a time, is this the worst or the best time for progressive and kind of involved music? Because I'm thinking, is it worse because people are very, you know, 2 seconds into a song, if the riff doesn't explode, they turn off? Or is it a good time because people can now sit with a piece of music in all its forms, on the headphones, in the car,
I think it's an age thing as well. I think you know, obviously there's kids out there that are a lot younger enough that will have the time and will have the attention span, and some that won't. And it goes the other way where it's the older people. It's just very. I think it's from person to person. Yeah. Really. Even for me, like, sometimes if it doesn't grab me, you know, and it could be a progressive track, but the riff could be like, you know, could be quite bland and go, oh no, after like a minute I'm turning off, you know. I think it's I might be in this band, but I'm not always invested in every band that I've
seen. I think it's
from person to person, really. It's hard to answer that, you know. Nobody really knows the answer.
It's challenging, isn't it? I think I'd go, if I could put something forward, I would say that it's now, when we're told that progressive music in all of its forms is, there's no audience for it, and there's people don't have the attention spans. I think that that's only partly true. I think that we're told it's total true, but I don't think it is. Oh. I think that when you do like something, you know, I think you're willing to listen to that 12-minute song or whatever, you know. But it's earned. I think it's earned. Yeah. I think, like, we talked about Pink Floyd as being the stalwarts of progressive music, if you will. And if they release, they've got a new, I think they had a new song come out in a new video, and it's quite long. I think it's close to 10 minutes.
River or something?
Well, no, after that. Another video come out that they've done, Gilmore's done. And I know I'm going to watch all of that because they've earned that time. You know, and I think that's where it comes from. I think if you can show quality, people will go, okay, I'm going to... Like, we talked about movies then for a second, where it's like, you know, Tarantino now brings out a 3-hour movie. I'm sitting for the whole 3 hours.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who I haven't heard of, it may take a while. So I think that, you know, quality, as always, is the through line to this. If you do something of great quality, I think that people will listen to that. If it's 2 hours long, it's 2 hours long. If it's 20 minutes long, I think people will listen to that. I think, ladies and gentlemen, if I could steer people to the album, it is the opener, Torchbearer, where I think that if you've got them then, I think if you get to the end of Torchbearer and you really enjoy that, I think that's the album. I think you've got them for the entire album.
Thank you for saying that. Nice one, Coop.
I think I'll be interested to hear, ladies and gentlemen, what people think when I'll put links up to the album naturally. But I think that's the case. I think if you get them there, I think that is such a... It's all the colours that you use going through the album.
In that song, there's pretty much everything that the album has in that.
That's a great, great song. Just, if somebody said to us, like, what does your band sound like? I think that is a very
show good them one. That because that's a journey. That's nine minutes of what we do.
Yeah,
now.
It's got all the
it's tough to, you know, you know. I always feel I sell bands short when I say this song is the way in, because that is by no means that is one tiny part of what this. Let's say journey is it with this album, you know. So I think, you know, listening back to it now, I've still got to really kind of delve into it, because it's there's an enormous amount there. And so I suppose the other question to look at now is that when you're playing this live, are you, and you can't do it as a whole, how are you breaking it up then?
I mean, we are finding it, because
What was the last set we did? We opened with Torchbearer now.
Yeah, and it's a similar reaction to how you described as the album. It's like once people, because you do, you see a bit of confusion on some faces. Some people kind of just stand there, like they're hearing the feedback at the start, and they're like, "What?"
Yeah, because they have the intro, you know, the swell and the voices, and like they come in now on the EP. We have all that, the samples.
Yeah, yeah.
So that kind of, for me, that's what should grab you.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of vibe when the lights go down and that's kind of the start. And then we've kind of like just, I mean, we played Dawn Creature.
Yeah, we did.
We played Dawn Creature. Pretty much the set that you saw at Molly's Chambers is the set we've been playing.
Yeah.
One song off the EP, then, the three, two or three off the
What's exciting for me, and I think I know a lot of the listeners and the people who have seen you live, what's exciting for me is that this album is an end. It is the culmination of like 4 years of, you know, this whole sort of thing kind of where it is. And now it feels as though the next thing that comes after this, whatever that may be, will be a real, sort of, you know, important thing musically for you guys. I think that this is, you must have got good reactions from the press. You must have got good reactions.
Absolutely. We've had a flood of incredible reviews.
Yeah. 10 out of 10. Yeah,
we haven't seen a single review below 8 out of 10 yet. And these are by, you know, like blogs and zines that I check regularly just as a fan, you know, up on like No Clean Singing and pages like that. And like we've had not to just toot our own horn, but yeah, like the praise has been incredible.
It's there for people to see. It's just, exactly. It's nice, it's rewarding, I suppose, when you do produce something that's that involved, you get people who get it.
It is rewarding, as you said, people who get it, but there wasn't, not to sound arrogant, but there was no part of me that thought, like, I expected to get a good reaction.
Yeah.
And again, I'll say that's not arrogance. That's purely because as a fan of this kind of music, as a huge fan of this genre, me personally, I fucking love this album. I'm the opposite of Alan, who doesn't listen to it very often.
You listen to it all the time.
Yeah, maybe not all the time. Maybe I hadn't for quite a while, but like when we were
That's one of the things that, here's the other thing. We talked about like kind of the different ways you pull in an audience and the different ways that you engage with an audience. Mm. One of the things that drew me to you being a guitar player was seeing how intensely you were taking the material and how intensely you were involved in what you were doing. There was no posturing for the posturing's sake. There was no, you know, throwing shapes. That's not going to happen at this show, ladies and gentlemen.
It won't allow me to.
It's not that. It was just this real sort of earnest kind of, this must be delivered correctly. Yes. You know, that came across almost to the point, dare I say, Ant, that, you know, that you didn't really enjoy, you know, or attention is the wrong word, but certainly you didn't really enjoy the press side of it and that type of thing and that the business end of it. It almost seemed that way. And I saw that as a massive positive, by the way, but it seemed that way. You kind of were like, look, this side of it's okay, but I'm here to, this is what we're doing. There's a very clear mission to be
all that stuff, it helps the music, but the music must be the main focus anyway. You know what I mean? Like, if it's not, like you said, there's levels to it. If it's no good, people are going to tell you. And if they think it's good, they're going to tell you. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
You know, but it's hard to know until you put it out.
It is.
You might think it's good, and obviously, you know, you want it to be people to like it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone puts stuff out they don't like.
You'd be surprised.
There might be spats within bands where, like, you know,
I don't believe there was any part of this record that was a compromise, gentlemen.
No, I don't believe, allow it to be.
I don't believe that. I know that there might be artists out there that put songs out and the second or third song from the end it isn't that great or whatever, or there was someone interfering in some way. I believe that this was made in the vacuum of your own delivery. You know,
which is a dangerous thing in itself, because we had the time, but we worked too hard, we'd spent too much time, we'd invested too much into it compromise.
Also, like you said about playing live, we did dabble in playing some of the songs live, so we got feedback live, which kind of encouraged, you know, the process as well, and thought, okay, we're on something there that works.
Yeah. Because that's the other, it's the old tag of indulgency when you're left with lots of like time and space to do stuff, that the indulgence card can get played, you know, and that's probably the biggest crime that gets leveled against progressive music, isn't it? It's indulgence. If you can't say it in in, you know, 3 minutes, then you can't say it, which is utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that's nonsense.
Utterly ridiculous, you know.
And he said, all you need is a good 6 minutes. That's what he said. That's all you need is a good 6 minutes and you're fine.
Yeah, and you think, like, we hold classical music to such a high regard. Yeah. It's the highest art form of music is regarded as, you know, massive orchestral pieces that take 60 minutes to perform. Hold on, aren't they under the same thing? You know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? That somehow, because it's like, rock, you know, guitars, bass, and drums.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't like, it's not like we seek out to write these long songs. I mean, like, we'd have arguments and discussions in the room, like, this is getting too long, guys. Like, and
we've chopped stuff down in the past, or we've made things like, it depends.
Every song is as long as it needs to be, I think.
Every
song has gone through so many multiple permutations and variations.
And I'm not against personally making 2 or 3 minute songs.
No.
I wouldn't mind doing that as a challenge.
No,
maybe you can get the same.
It would be fun to try.
Yeah, it's still a tool in the box. You know, you think like Inter Alia is like 1 minute, 2 seconds or something.
Yeah,
and it's used as a pivot point. It's used as a kind of an augmentation to the other songs. It's like you've just used that screwdriver from the toolbox to do something else.
But if you know what's on entirely, the piano line is the hook from Rite of Embers.
Yeah, so it's the motif
repeating throughout. That's the kind of
it's not like it's used differently. It's a song in all of its forms. It's a song, but it's not.
It's a hint of what's to come, really.
It's an interlude, but when we started talking about doing an album as opposed to another EP, like something me and Alan definitely talked about, because we're big fans of bands who do this, was interludes. Mm. And, you know, we didn't want to have tons and tons of songs because the songs are going to be so long. But also, I didn't want to, you know, I hated it as a fan. I didn't want to feel shortchanged, like, oh, well, there's only 5 songs on this album or whatever. It's like, is that an album? Is that an EP? And it's like, well, it's what the band call it. And that's how we felt like this, you know, we got these 6 solid songs and like, this is the same world, this is the album, it's not any longer, it's not any shorter, but we also were adamant that it needed these interludes.
Yeah, it needed space, like I said, between the songs to like breathe.
Yeah.
But the important thing was, we didn't want them to just be throwaway, kind of just like, oh, just a bit of like, a bit of...
Like a random little line or a little hook, it had to tie into something else.
Isn't that like slightly challenging in the era that we are of how music is kind of discovered and digested? Is that someone may not hear that album in that form?
Oh, of course, no. They might pick out just random songs.
They may hear it entirely on a playlist, and it still has to stand on its own as it's a Mairu song. And it's, even if it's the whole band's not playing on it, it still has to represent us. Like, the mood has to set the tone of us. It's not, like I said, it can't be just a random filler.
It's tough as well now that's the way we almost have to kind of think about an album in its entirety, that there's a chance that this will not be digested the way it to be digested. You know, like when Pink Floyd, as we keep going back to, when they did The Wall, they didn't think that someone would take that apart and listen to bits and pieces. No. You know, it was intended in that way. And it's, you know, it's interesting that I think, ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to this album and don't possibly listen to it in full, I would argue you've only seen a little bit of the movie then. You may have seen scenes, but you ain't seen the whole movie. And I think that that's the thing that I would encourage people that, you know, it's good that Torchbearer is the first song, because I think, like I said, I think if you get them for that, they'll stay for the whole thing. And I think that that's where the payoff will happen, when they hear the whole thing. And I think that's where you can truly judge this album, ladies and gentlemen. It's like, you know, I've like I say, several times I've listened to it in its entirety. I'm still getting it under my fingers about kind of how I feel about it. I don't know. Is the honest answer. I know what parts I like, and I know kind of what I enjoy. But I think for me, and this is what I keep pointing to, I think live is where I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
I think that... Oh, guys, there needs to be a strong move to get that produced in its entirety.
Yeah, that'd be great. And we will do it. That'd be amazing.
Well, listen, I mean, we could talk progressive metal to the end. And it's really great to finally get you guys on the show. Talk to you at the shows quite a few times now to try and get you on. It was nice that it was able to talk about the new album. The new album, ladies and gentlemen, Soul Cultus, Sun Whistle. By the way, I had to ask, all I thought of when I first read that title and the first couple of seconds of Torchbearer was the Dark Souls games.
Oh, right, okay.
And I was like, that's another in. This is another in for me. What I'm going to say to it, it's this deeply inaccessible thing that's very unforgiving but totally rewarding. And that's where it led me. I do apologise that was probably not the intention, but that's where it led me. But ladies and gentlemen, so Soul Cultus is out now. Mario would just, one of those bands, like I say, a hidden gem. And I don't think you're going to be hidden for very long, gents. It's really nice talking to you. I cannot wait to see this live. I suggest everybody checks out the album. And when's your next show?
It is the 23rd of September. We're going to be playing.
Okay, this will be up before then, so that'll be a good chance. Whereabouts is that?
That's Felfoot Wood in Ulverston. So it's the Lake District. So a guy called Barry puts on some really cool eclectic events. I did. I saw Godflesh headlined an event called
Fantastic.
It escapes me, but it's in the middle of the woods, and it's like
it definitely fits our vibe anyway.
Yeah, it's really cool, eclectic. Like,
are you in the woods? That sounds
it's like a barn amazing. In the woods on a hill. You know what I mean? It's like the pagan vibes. Hey, and stuff.
That sounds amazing. So we're gonna be playing. That's it. That'll be amazing.
We're playing majority of the album there anyway, so that'll be.
But Barry, the guy who owns the place, he's very, very supportive. He's had us on quite a few times, and it's we always love going there because, like we were saying, it's in the woods, and it's like what a better kind of setting for what we do, and it's just
absolutely.
Should be night time by then.
And it's looking forward to that one.
The one after that is Bradford, I think.
Bradford, we're going to be playing. For a guy, Gaz Ironbore Promotions, we've been chatting to him for a little bit, and I've been watching and keeping an eye on some of his events for quite a while. He does some really good stuff. He does some great, like
14th thing, isn't it?
I believe so. Yeah. So check anyone interested. Check them out.
I'll put links to all your work, obviously, and the upcoming shows as well, gentlemen. It's been really nice to kind of listen to what you've been doing behind the albums, because it makes the album more accessible as well and more interesting from there. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Alan Ant from Mario. It's been really nice to have you on the show, guys.
Thanks a lot, Coop.
Cheers, Coop. Nice one.
Thanks, guys.
Do it again.
That was a rather wonderful Mairu there. Love to just sit down with them and go through kind of the album and just talk about. I always find listening to an artist talk about the work and what they've been doing just enriches that work, doesn't it? You know, it just makes you listen a little bit harder. It seems to make a little bit more sense. It seems to mean more. I love special editions of things and behinds and commentary of things. So hearing how they kind of made the album and how they kind of wanted it to come out and be kind of listened to and understood was incredibly important. I think what was nice is that, you know, I got most of the messages that they were trying to put across there and the feels and the vibes that they were after. You know, that's always must be rewarding to hear that, you know, the thing you did was actually accepted in the way it was intended. So it was nice to sit down with Mairu. They're going to be, I think we'll probably almost certainly book them for a show. Would you like to hear me tell you that we booked them in the show and do something interesting? What about, you know, we could maybe do, I'll throw it out to the universe. What about if we put the album out and did it in full and we recorded it, but they played the album in full at one of the session shows? That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Let's think about that, eh? But if you do want to appear on any of the session shows that I'll be doing, you know, feel free to drop me a message. I want to hear from new upcoming bands that no one's heard of before, because the thing is, there's lots of great promoters out there doing great stuff with the bands already here and established and working hard. I'm looking at the bands that maybe haven't got a chance or no one's heard of before. That's really exciting to me. So get in touch about that. If you want to be a guest on the spoken version of the live shows again, message me. You just have some connection with the metal world and then we can get off to the races and start talking. The two shows that are booked now are the 9th of November at the Outpost. That is the live spoken show that's free if you register now. There is 40 places available. Lord knows what there are now when this comes out. Maybe not, hopefully, eh? And then the second show is on the 18th of November. That is the Live Spoken Metal Sessions, which is live bands playing and being interviewed and all kinds of great stuff. They're coming up now. You'll see all those bits and pieces on social media, so I urge you to check them out. And there's going to be a whole lot of nice surprises and some nice stuff coming up soon as well, as we kind of build to this. Could be a big November for the Spoken Metal Show, along with a load of other things I'm really excited to announce as well that's coming up. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ryan Rube. I hope you go to see them at the shows, particularly at the Quarry on the 17th, this coming Sunday. If I can get to that show, I'm getting to that show. That will take a couple of wicked. And as always, I will see you at the show.